Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Whole Scoop. As you know by now, we are the Health and Wellness Radio Show, where our guests are always highly credentialed in the topics we discuss. I am Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian, your host, founder of Naturally Nutrition, and you will find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. So you know by now that it's important for me to provide you with highly qualified guests, and of course, I'm going to do that each and every time because that is the stipulation for being on the show. We don't have a fancy name for tonight's show. We have the actual cut to the chase. We're talking about direct primary care. What is that? You're going to learn all about it because it's so important that it's just a matter that you need to know. We're health and wellness. You need to know what the options are out there. So we're going to talk about what direct primary care is, why it's important, and why you should know about it. So let me just tell you, I got to read this. I got to remind you that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topics of discussion, it's always recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. Okay, the number to call in is 347-855-8894. We also have our Blog Talk Radio group, the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio group on Facebook. Please join us. Let us know what you think. Ask us questions, blogging questions as we're talking. Somebody's checking. We have the website, thewholescoopradio.com. You'll find more information about our guests there. We kind of changed things up a little bit for 2018. We're going to tell you who's on the show, but we're not going to give you all the information. We're going to let you go to that website, learn all about our guests, learn a little more about the topics, and kind of go from there. We will be taking questions later on in the show. Again, the call-in number is 347-855-8894. I'm going to call out the last four digits of your telephone number. If you want to ask a question, remember to press the number 1 to get in the queue to let me know that you have a question, because a lot of people listen by telephone. We get a lot of numbers that show up on the board, and then if you don't press the number 1, it means to me that you don't have a question. So, and maybe that just means we do a really, really good job of explaining everything. And sometimes that's true, and sometimes maybe not so much. Anyway, tonight we are so lucky to have a return guest. She's fabulous. She is a medical doctor. Her name is Dr. Toni Muzinegro, and she is born and raised in Southwest Florida and graduated from the University of Florida. Earning a degree in nutrition and zoology. She's my kind of person. She attended medical school at Nova Southeastern University of Osteopathic Medicine in Fort Lauderdale and graduated in 2007. And she completed her family practice residency at Botsford Hospital in Farmington Hills, Michigan. She is a direct primary care physician, and she is passionate about empowering her patients to take control of their health and health care by way of education and relationship based on trust and mutual respect. Seriously, I'm going to read that one again. She is passionate about empowering patients to take control of their health and health care by way of education and a relationship based on trust and mutual respect. I know that might be a foreign concept for all of you, but I'm going to bring her on now, and she's going to You'll understand exactly what that means, because she's absolutely sincere about that, but that's also what direct primary care is about. So, Dr. Muzzy. I'm going to call you Dr. Muzzy. Is that good?
That sounds great. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Thanks so much for being here.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great. It's great. Like I said in the intro, I really meant that. I just want to get right to the chase of direct primary care and what it is and what it's about. But before we do that, I really do have to kind of just give some overview as to why this healthcare issue is so important. Do you mind if I just read a couple of things?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. These are stats from the CDC. These are stats from the government sites. So just real quick and dirty. Number of persons under the age of 65 uninsured, approximately 28.2 million. The percent of persons under the age of 65 uninsured at the time they were doing this, and I think this was the end of 2015, was 10.4%. Percent of adults aged 18 to 64 uninsured, 12.4%. Percent of children under 18 uninsured, 5.1%. And then when Obamacare kicked in, 11.7% of Americans were uninsured in the second quarter of 2017, up from 10.9% at the end of 2016. And then that's expected to change because of all the healthcare changes. That's expected to really just kind of be distorted. They haven't really decided yet. It really just depends on how this all shakes out. I know it sounds like we might have had an end to it, but maybe not. So just to give you a better idea, some of the healthcare stats that are just amazing, $3.2 trillion is spent in the U.S. In 2015, $3.2 trillion. To give you a perspective on that, the U.S. spent about $9,990 per person on healthcare in 2015, as opposed to a place like Somalia, who spent $33 per person, and Japan, with a longer life expectancy than the U.S. citizen, spent $3,816 per person. So we really do spend a whole lot more. Medicare spending totaled $646 billion, making up a fifth of the total national health care spending. And just as you might think that most of our health care spending goes towards physicians, I bet you're going to tell me I'm wrong on that, because so do the stats. The physicians get about 20% of that. Hospitals get the biggest chunk. So out of all of that, $3.2 trillion in health care, and we still are now climbing with the uninsured rate. So what are people supposed to do? Well, they got to have options, which is why we're talking tonight. So why don't we just talk about what direct primary care is, and let's just get to it.
Sounds good.
Okay. So you're a direct primary care physician. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Because this is a foreign concept for people. They don't even know what this is.
Yeah, absolutely. If you haven't heard of direct primary care, what it is a new model of healthcare delivery that essentially removes the third party, in this case being the insurers, from the physician-patient relationship, because we think that primary care is something that is so basic but also so necessary. And should be available to everyone, you know, at a reasonable, affordable cost. And when we do remove the third party from, overseeing and deciding what, is reimbursable or not, and deciding on how much that particular type of healthcare should cost, when we remove that, we see free market forces actually driving the cost of that part of healthcare down. So in our model, patients pay a monthly flat membership fee, which at our practice is age-based and ranges anywhere from $25 for a child who's a dependent of a member. Just for adults, it's anywhere from 60 to 110, depending on the age. So the majority of our patients pay either $60 or $80 per month. And what that does is grant access to your personal physician, essentially, with same-day appointments or next day, email access, cell phone access. And so we want to take care of you in real time. And on top of that, because we are not reliant upon a third party to dictate how much we're going to be reimbursed and thereby how many patients we need to see in a day to meet our overhead, we are afforded much longer appointment times with patients because our panel is significantly reduced, and we're able to keep a smaller staff because we don't have anybody answering to insurance companies, which in a typical office, you might have two or three staff members per physician, and most of their time being spent trying to figure out how to get the doctor's office paid. So in this case, we take that out of the equation, and we're able to kind of have a smaller staff, lower overhead, and see patients for longer durations. And in addition to that, and Carol, you can interrupt me at any point, but I'm just trying to cover the highlights. In addition to that, we have an in-house dispensary, as most direct primary care offices do. And so we actually stock medications at close to wholesale pricing, as you're going to find anywhere. And so essentially, we don't try to make profit from our in-house dispensary, which stocks anything from lisinopril to muscle relaxers to antibiotics, all the things that I most commonly prescribe, all of which are generic. And so, for example, you could get a 30-day supply of something like cyclobenzaprine, which is a pretty commonly used muscle relaxer, for 93 cents at our office. And
wow.
I don't care who's giving it out for $4. They're still making, 400% profit, which
That's
is good
right.
for them. But, in our case, we just like to do that as an added value. And it's just a way to drive the price of healthcare down.
So I am going to interrupt you now.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you
sure.
for that. That's a great overview, but let's kind of break it down a little bit. So just so we all understand it, direct primary care is not about having health insurance. It is about an alternative to health insurance, and it's about a cheaper alternative to paying premium pricing without insurance, number one, right?
Correct.
Okay, I just want to, because if I don't get the terminology right, please forgive me. So I want you to correct me, okay?
Yeah, sure. So you could say to some extent it could be in place of insurance, although the lawyers make it very clear to us that we are not considered insurance, and once you sign up, we have to make that very clear. In our paperwork, because we're primary care, right? And we do our very best at trying to work with local specialists to kind of make arrangements for patients who are cash paying to kind of lower their rates, or because patients are going to be paying cash up front and that kind of thing. But really, the only thing that we truly have control of is our prices. We also have we have also different contracted cash-based pricing, which is at a significant savings for people who, for things like labs and imaging studies, an X-ray is $35. MRI, if you have it ordered by us, $250 at some of our partnering imaging centers. And as far as blood work goes, same thing. You can have a complete blood count. A metabolic panel, vitamin D, lipid panel, hemoglobin A1C, all for around like $40 to $50, as opposed to maybe it would be around $250 or so. But yeah, so I am a little bit careful to say we replace health insurance,
we can handle your primary care needs.
It makes me feel a little bit vulnerable, because obviously as a primary care physician, I have limitations based on my training and
sure.
expertise, and definitely need to reach out for help, with different, sometimes it's a specialist, or sometimes people do, unfortunately need hospital care. And so being a member of ours doesn't cover, what happens, outside our office. So of course,
Well, we're going to talk about that too.
Yeah.
We're going to get to that in just a second. We're kind of giving a bonus, some bonus information outside of the realm of direct care. So you stay tuned for that bonus round. anyway, so here's where we are, as I understand it. Let's just make me the person here, and I choose direct primary care. There is an option. There's also another type of option called concierge medicine. This is not that, correct?
Correct. It's concierge-esque, I would say. I think probably the service that we're able to provide levels that of a lot of concierge. This is the difference being that they actually do, in fact, still bill insurance for everything that they do. But then on top of that, they charge a membership fee, and typically it's significantly more expensive than what we would charge at our practice.
Okay. So there's that, and then there's direct primary care, and then there's traditional, and everybody understands what the traditional approach is, so we're not going to explain that. So when I am a person and I say, okay, and I am a prime example of this, okay, I fell in the cracks of having an independent health care insurance for myself. So as a business owner, I have my own health care insurance. So as a result, when they changed, in January, the individual mandate went away. And by that, if you think that doesn't impact people, it impacted me greatly. It impacted me by $500 a month for my premium. So my premium was already at $400 a month, and they went up to an extra $500 a month. So they wanted me to pay almost $900 a month.
Oh my gosh.
For my health insurance, and that's when I just said, nope, sorry. And I knew I was going to be in those statistics that they were talking about, where it was going to throw 22 million people off of their insurance. And that 22 million was about just throwing out the whole Affordable Care Act. This is different. This is the individual mandate, and that was about 15 million of us got thrown off of our plan instead of the 22 million.
Wow.
So, yeah, you're silly. So I had to look at other options. I had to think about what I wanted to do, and, so we're going to talk about that coming up in the bonus round, and I can tell you what I did, and we'll go from there. But let's just take me now, okay? So now I come in to you, and I say, hey, I don't have any insurance, and I hear that you're affordable. So, and you just gave your prices, and it's very affordable. So what those prices do for me is it gives me direct access to you as my physician, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And you and I would sit down for approximately, I don't know, you tell me, how much time would I get with you?
Generally, our new patient visits are about 90 minutes. Sometimes a little bit longer, sometimes shorter if people have other things to do. But yeah, generally around an hour and a half.
So you tell people ahead of time, if you're going to book, you need to be prepared to be here for a few hours.
Yeah, generally speaking. I mean, I have as much time as people want, but I realize people are busy. So sometimes they ask me to cut to the chase, but we do like to go into depth, regarding your family history and your lifestyle and your diet and, stress levels and all that stuff.
You get to know your patient.
Yeah. I'm lucky enough to be afforded the time. Yeah. And listen, that's what every doc wants to do. I mean, for the most part, I would say they're just working in a broken system that doesn't allow for it. And it's unfortunate. And that's why doctors are burning out at higher rates than ever, and patients are unsatisfied.
Well, let's run down that contrast a little bit,
Sure.
So if I come to you and you're going to get to know me, and we're going to spend at least 90 minutes together, and that's not going to be each and every time that I see you, right? It's going to be contingent upon what I need the next time, right? Okay.
Right. The next time, what you need might be taken care of over the phone, by a photo that you send me of a rash or what have you. Yeah.
But I'm going to have a comfort level that you're going to know me pretty well, right?
Exactly.
Okay. But now let's just compare and contrast that to the traditional approach of me finding a new doctor. Let's just say I pick up a new health insurance program, and now my old doctor's not covered. I got to go to a new person, and that new person, I get approximately how many minutes with that person, would you say?
Generally speaking, for you for a brand new patient visit, you may have 20 minutes, and that's if you're lucky. You know, you may end up having to wait a couple months to get into a doctor's office, just because that's generally how it goes. And you may wait in the waiting room for an hour or two before your appointment. Not that anybody's doing anything wrong, other than that they're working in a broken system, trying to see more patients than is actually possible.
Right. And how many patients do they see?
Generally, primary care docs are seeing anywhere from like 25 to 30, 35 patients in a standard workday.
Okay, so 30 patients in a standard workday. How many patients do you see in a standard workday?
So anywhere from 0 to maybe 8, I think, was my most probably that I've seen thus far in a day.
So let's just say, in a perfect world, when you work 8 hours a day, an hour a patient.
Correct.
Okay, so after this new traditional doc that I see takes his or her 20 minutes with me, and I think, because we've been conditioned to believe this, that's a long time. Oh my gosh, they spent 20 minutes with me. I feel good, right? Then the next time I need something, I schedule an appointment. How much time do I generally get?
Those are booked usually at least 4, sometimes 5 to an hour. And, part of your appointment time is just being brought back. So by the time you're brought back and everything's said and done, you may get like 7-8 minutes, I think, for most follow-ups. Yeah.
Okay. So now I'm going to get 7 or 8 minutes. So I better get my information out. I better be able to say what I need to say. And I can't count on my physician to know pretty much me, because he or she spent 20 minutes with me a couple of months back in the scheme of seeing 30 other people that day.
Yeah, it's just kind of difficult, right?
Yeah. So okay. So now we get that comparison. We understand that. Now let's just go a little bit further. I'm gonna do this compare and contrast a little bit, okay? So now I know that my office visit is covered unless I have a copay. Maybe my copay is $35 or something, right? So let's just say I pay my copay. I feel okay. I get some kind of med or something or another that I need. But then I have something else going on. Maybe something else does happen, or maybe I have what I'm thinking to be a side effect of the medication's not working. I got to go back. I got to pay another copay, whatever. How does that work with you?
Yeah, you're hitting the nail on the head. So it's so difficult to access a regular primary care doc. You may or may not get a call back. You may or may not be able to reach anybody after hours. And so you might call back the next day. They may, if they're really generous, you may get a call back, but they may tell you you need to come back in, and see the doctor for follow-up, because everybody knows that, unfortunately, at fee-for-service offices, they can't gain revenue by anything other than bringing a patient into the office, making them wait, making them come see and visit the doctor face-to-face. That's the only way that office is going to be able to bill for their services. And so obviously, if as a part of a direct primary care practice, something pops into your head and you had your visit already, if it's something simple enough, you shoot a text over, or just call back to the office, and you can expect a phone call back, and hopefully resolution of whatever the issue is. Obviously many things do need to be handled in the office, but we do as much as we can without inconveniencing people, by making them come in, to the point of, whether we're going to be able to meet the standard of care. If it's going to affect your care in an adverse way, I'm usually not comfortable doing it over the phone. But most things, that's not the case. A lot of what people need can be figured out by their history. And so sometimes a physical exam is essential, and when it's probably not, you know, we're usually comfortable handling things without you coming in.
Okay. So now I pay you X number of dollars per month, and that lends me access to you, right? That's pretty much what that gets
yeah.
me. And then if I need
correct.
A prescription med or something, you have your own formulary there. You have generic drugs there. You just said that it's less than the 400% markup from
in a lot of cases, yeah, it's pretty significant difference
yeah.
in cost.
And you have your own X-rays, you have your own CT scans, everything like that, or not?
So those we order, and so we partner with imaging facility that gives us the cash-based pricing, you know, at a significantly reduced cost. They're not in our office, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you take me, for example, and you were going to say to me, okay, if I just needed to do a couple of workups on you, you could pretty much expect to, if you were doing that with the traditional approach, I know that the insurance would pick most of it up or pick some of it up, but see, maybe not, because
there's
for
no
somebody
telling.
Like me,
there's
with
no
visual
telling
and,
nowadays.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So let's just say, for all intents and purposes of this particular conversation, the insurance will pick up part of it. Well,
right.
the pricing structure is completely different. So that partial payment that I might make, let's just say, well, the average cost for, say, I needed a CT scan which is a CAT scan and some blood work. Let's just take those two things. The average
sure.
cost for that traditionally would be probably somewhere in the neighborhood if I was paying out of pocket, which is different than insurance paying.
Mm-hmm.
But if insurance
mm-hmm.
is being, what is it, a couple thousand dollars?
Right. If you're billing through insurance, you're going to get the insurance prices. So CAT scan is usually somewhere around $1,000, or a little bit over, and blood work. God, that could range, but, you know, for like standard physical blood work could be anywhere from like $250 to $300.
Okay.
You'd be
so
looking
let's say
around
$1,500.
Yeah.
And then let's say that, you know, partial payment of that, let's just cut it, make it easy and say 50%. So it's still going to cost me $750. About that.
Right. Right.
Okay. So that's traditionally. Now, if I come to you, and I pay my $110 a month. That's not part of this, okay? So I'm just trying to give people an idea. And now I need a CT scan and the same blood work that we were just talking about, say, in general. What would that cost me?
Right. So then you'd be more around to $250 for the CAT scan and maybe $40-$50. I mean, depending on what the blood work, but the standard blood work is around $40-$50.
Okay.
So
about $300.
Around $300. Right.
Okay. So less than half of what it would cost me with insurance.
Right. Yeah, typically. Sure.
Okay. And that's the point that I wanted to make with people in that, you know, it sounds like, well, I've got to pay
yeah.
for everything. But here you are. You've got a structured system that actually costs less than even if you had health insurance.
Right.
So
and
let's
just imagine
say,
the wasteful
yeah.
dollars that are being spent, you know, every day with these inflated prices.
Well, there's
you
inflated
know?
Price. Well, I mean, think about the statistics. I picked those statistics for a reason to read. You know, when
mm-hmm.
when spending $9,990 per person in healthcare, and that was in 2015, so that's 3 years ago. So
right.
God only knows what it is now. And then to consider that and then say all out of the $3.2 trillion that's spent on healthcare, only 20% of that goes to the physician. So all these other things, all these other factors come into play as to expenses and they just keep getting higher and higher and higher. And I don't know about you, but my paycheck hasn't gotten any higher to
I know,
you know,
right?
So it's just kind of crazy. And then so why I'm doing this show, why I've asked you to join me, and thank you so much for picking this apart with me, is because I believe that we all have an idea of what healthcare is, but I don't really believe that people who are outside of the healthcare world really understand the intricacies of all those little things right. that add up to make us pay that $120 for one little aspirin, you know?
Exactly.
So this show is never going to cover that, and I don't intend to expect that maybe we could just pick it apart a little bit to get people to understand that, you know, there is insurance billing and then there's out-of-pocket billing. Right. And if you have out-of-pocket billing, it does matter. It does make a difference. So now, let's just say that CT scan warrants some more information, some more stuff, and more testing. You could pretty much follow mm-hmm. that same scenario all the way through. And let's just say you did two or three more tests and then had to have a procedure on top of that. So conceivably, with insurance, you could be putting out a good $10,000 to $15,000 out of pocket, and with you, maybe a fifth of that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And then with that, I get you who knows me. I get you who understands me as a person, me as my history, and I get the comfort level of knowing that, hey, my doc took the time to get to know me, so whatever she tells me or whatever she's saying to me, I feel confident that she's got my interest at heart, and it's not just about what that approach is. So let's explain what I just said by virtue of running that down traditionally. So let's take a diagnosis, and let's say cardiac disease, you know, some kind of heart condition. Let's just say you're going to put mm-hmm. somebody through a heart cath or something to kind of do some diagnostics. There's a protocol that the physicians must follow traditionally, right?
Sure.
Okay. And so if you're a traditional physician, you would have to follow the protocol of, okay, patient comes to see me, did I do A, B, and C? Okay, and if that, it's like an algorithm. And then, so if I
you
did A,
agenda.
B, and C, and there's,
yeah,
and if it's yes to A, then go, then do, you know, C, D, E, and F. And if it's yes to number three, then you do, you know, the G, H, and I. And you still, there's a procedure to follow. So there's all kinds of steps that the physician must follow. And there's no real deviation from that, correct? The physician has to stay on track with that, or else what happens?
Well, yeah, I mean, right. Especially if, not that that's a bad thing, right? But I think I get where you're going with that.
We're going to get to that. Because what I want to do is you talked a little bit about how frustrating it is. I want to get to that, and this is the point to make for that, okay?
I think you know, physicians who are maybe working for a large hospital system, you know, where you have oversight by administrators who are looking at bottom line and looking for reimbursement from insurance companies who use X, Y, or Z benchmarks based on whether their physicians operated in a manner that was thought to be, you know, the most cost-effective protocol and
there's no doubt, and let me just put a caveat in here, that this is not about what they're doing is wrong or that it's questionable or anything. This is just about what standard procedure is, and it means that they're all trying to do what's best for the patient because they've got evidence-based protocol that says this is what we need to do in order to achieve the right outcome. So yeah, that's a let me just put that caveat right in it, that nobody, there's nothing nefarious here. It's just a matter of, okay, this is what they do, this is what they have to do. So my point is really, you may have to have five other steps to get to what somebody's trying to get, you know, that's thinking that might be wrong with you. You might have to go through five other steps. Well, those five other steps still cost extra money.
Sure.
So that cost factor is continuing to add up. I'm not saying you won't do that because you too have, you know, a license to protect and you want what's best for your patient and you want to make sure that you encompass all of those steps. But as we just made the point, what you're doing versus what they're doing traditionally, even with insurance, is a whole lot cheaper. So as people are thinking about healthcare costs and worried about healthcare costs, you still are getting a more comprehensive review from your physician and your physician's team at a lesser price. That was the only point I was trying to make.
Right. Absolutely.
So no matter how many steps, because it's up to the physician on how many steps need to be taken. You know, if you think that your patient needs to go one more step or five more steps, that's your call based on, you know, your experience with your patient. So that's not even in question. That's not in question with any physician. It's just that traditionally with insurance versus non-insurance, because the reason I keep making this point is because when people hear direct primary care, when people hear, oh, I've got to pay for it, they automatically get turned off. And I didn't want anybody to just say, oh, I can't do this and just tune us right out. I want them to understand why they can do this, because they would be doing it anyway in a whole lot more dollars with insurance.
Exactly, and we're so programmed to think, does my insurance cover it? That's like the first thing that's thought about, right? And it's very hard to change that paradigm of thought. But you're right, but at the end of it, the dollars and cents add up to much less sometimes if you are just paying cash.
Right. So that was the point I was trying to make. So anybody who's thinking about walking away from this, please don't, because there's a lot more to cover. We still have some time here. I want to make a couple of more points. One is, why direct primary care? Why are physicians doing this? Because this is the up-and-coming thing. Why are physicians doing this? Why did you do this?
Well, you know, for the most part, like I was saying before, physicians, you know, chose to be physicians and had it as a lifelong goal from early in life, and you have all these romantic ideas about how it's going to feel when you get to take care of patients and connect with them, and then it becomes very disenchanting, unfortunately, when you end out in the real world, you know, in a fee-for-service practice, which I was in for 8 years, and you know, I have obviously many brilliant colleagues who are fighting the good fight out there. Pretty much everybody that I know still, because DPC is pretty new. But so you get out in the real world and you realize that you are not able to actually listen to who a person really is. You kind of are trained to have this agenda. You're trained to interrupt patients when they're speaking. Believe it or not, that's part of your med school, you know, 101. And you're trained to direct the conversation in a way to get your, you know, points and move on, right? And so I think a lot of that leaves a lot to be desired, in that if you don't truly know who a person is, their past, their social, their economic, their everything, things that are stressful for them, I find it, you know, a bit of a disconnect to then to care for that patient in a primary care setting. Maybe in, you know, in specialist care, it's similar as well, but they don't spend as much time recurrently often with patients, except for certain circumstances. But so it's disenchanting for physicians. So you learn about this new model that lets you do exactly what you've dreamt of doing your whole life, sit down, get to know people, you know, make them feel that you care, because you really do. And patients who are, you know, in the fee-for-service world, they often don't feel like they're heard. They often don't feel like the physician cared. Most of the time, the physician really cares. It can't be conveyed because they're not afforded the time to do it. And so why direct primary care? So that you can you know, deliver healthcare in a way that's fulfilling to both you and your patients.
Okay. And I think that is that sums it up right there, in that not only do you get access to your physician, but your physician gets access to you. And it's the fit that everyone expects but doesn't get, or thinks that they get in that 20 minutes, that initial 20 minutes, and then gets discouraged when they go back and they get 7 minutes. And then it's, you know, how many times if I just had a dollar for every time I've heard, you know, if they just listen to me, I really do know what I'm saying, you know, and it just, the system doesn't allow for that, as you just described. So, I think you just summed it up, and, I think everybody needs to understand what direct primary care is all about. Now, Here's the bonus that I promised, because we're you know, and again, if you're going to ask a question, please press the number one. We got a lot of people on the board tonight, but I don't see anybody pressing one yet, and maybe that's because they're still kind of soaking it in, and I'm just going to kind of go with that. But the bonus to this is that now we're going to go back to me as the patient, because I had to look at alternatives, and honestly, I'm in between decisions. I actually made two decisions, and I'm running them both simultaneously right now. I took a healthcare plan that was lesser cost but a much higher deductible. So I have a $6,600 deductible. And a $6,600 deductible means that I'm going to pay for everything anyway, unless I have something, God forbid, catastrophic happen or traumatic happen, and then that kind of becomes a only $6,600.
Right.
I also signed up for a health share program, and that's a new concept as well for most people, health sharing. And I know that you know about health sharing because you told me about it. So do you mind explaining what that is and how that works, maybe in conjunction with what you do, and how somebody like me could benefit with both your practice and my health share?
Sure, yeah. So healthcare cost sharing programs have been around for a very long time. Generally speaking, they all emanate from the church some way or another. Some of them are sort of smaller, and some of them are healthcare cost sharing all the way down to you write Betty Smith a check to help cover her mammogram, and then next month she writes a check to Johnson. The one of the larger of the healthcare cost sharing programs, and the one that I'm most familiar with, is called Liberty Health Share, which is one of the more all-encompassing of all the healthcare cost sharing programs, with probably the most liberal acceptance guidelines. You know, some of the others do require that you have a letter from your pastor and that you prove this and that, as far as the church goes, whereas Liberty Health Share, they do have some, you know, some things that you sign, you know, when you're registering, or when you're submitting your application, that are religiously based, but otherwise they're a little bit more liberal in that regard. So it is not called insurance, but it behaves similarly to insurance. And so you essentially, for an individual, your depending on your age, your monthly fee could be anywhere from $149 to $199. So I think a 30 and under is $149 a month, and over that's $199. And a family of four, I know, is about $449. And so for each individual, there's a $500 amount that's considered your quote unquote unshared amount, which functions similarly to a deductible. And so that's the amount that you would be paying out of pocket for what would be considered shareable expenses. They cover essentially things similar to what an insurance company would typically include in their coverage. They exclude a few things that are of note. In this case, for Liberty HealthShare, they exclude the cost of mental health. They exclude the cost of alcohol or drug rehab, and they also don't pay for any kind of birth control. And so those are three important factors to take into consideration. But generally speaking, when it comes to other healthcare expenses, you'd be covered after that $500 is met. The other thing that's important to know about Liberty HealthShare is that they also underwrite. And so like old-fashioned insurance, and I'm hearing a little bit that this is starting over again, but so you do have to submit an application, that you have to list any diagnoses that have been active, I think, in the past 2 years. Don't quote me on any of this. LibertyHealthShare.org is a great place to go for the details, because I am by no way a spokesperson for them. And they, in fact, don't advertise at all, and that's why a lot of people haven't heard about it. But where did I leave off? Carol?
Actually, you were at it excluded on the mental.
Yes, okay, the underwriting. Sorry. No. So they may, if you're in, you know, currently in active treatment for any significant health issue or even a non-significant health issue, that you report on your application, which you should, of course, do in earnest, but they would actually exclude cost of that, I think, for the first entire year, and then they may start paying for 50% of it, I think, in the second year, and they change their guidelines from time to time, and then I think maybe by the third year, you may be lumped in with everybody else, and it's no longer considered a pre-existing condition. They also have a separate program that they, you know, for certain people who have things that are deemed to be modifiable by diet or lifestyle, such as smoking or obesity or hypertension, they put you on a health track. They assign you a health coach, and you actually have to pay $80 extra per month and prove that you are making strides toward improving that on your own, because it's supposed to be a community of like-minded individuals who are health conscious, who, you know, feel a duty to society, and everybody's working toward their health.
Let me just help you out there. It's a health share program, so we're all paying into it. So we all have
exactly.
to do our part to try to not have, you know, our neighbor Joe Smith have to pay
exactly.
for me, you know, deciding that I'm going to, you know, be 200 pounds overweight when I could maybe get that down or work at it, you know. And it doesn't necessarily
mean
everybody can do that, because I'm going to speak as a dietitian, but there may
sure.
be factors that allow you to help get that down, so you need to prove that you're working toward that.
Exactly.
So that's the difference between a health share. Everybody kind of pulls into that puts money into that pot, so when somebody needs it, they get it, but everybody's got to at least be conscious enough to understand that, you know, you got to do
right.
your part.
And so since they're nonprofit, you know, their rates haven't gone up in a very long time. I think it's like 20 years. And in fact, they had to have a rate decrease last year, I think, because of to keep their tax exempt status, I think. And so, you know, as opposed to insurance, where we're used to increasing like by double every now and now and again. So they've got a track record.
My case.
Yeah.
So how would that work with in conjunction with, say, direct primary care? How would I use a health share program with you?
So as far as I know, the Liberty Health Share, I think, is the only program at all that actually partners with certain with direct primary care practices, because they obviously see the value in direct primary care driving the healthcare costs down, you know, and affording people access, hopefully reduces ER visits and just reduces overall healthcare expenses for each individual. So they actually subsidize the membership fee to direct primary care practices all throughout the country. Ours is one of them. And so the specifics, I think they pay about 60% of it. That's the majority. The patient pays a portion as well. But they do that, you know, they want the patient to kind of have some skin in the game. And so they used to actually pay the entire fee up until, I think, just last year. So they changed their structure a little bit. And, you know, I think that they want the accountability on the patient's end as well, because if it's, again, being paid all for it by a third party, you know, there can be a little bit of a disconnect.
Right.
So I think that was their purpose right there.
Right. So then the moral of that particular segment would be that you got to do your homework. If you're looking at a health share program, you need to see exactly what and how they're covering it. And if you're looking at direct primary care, then you need to. And if you're looking to do a health share or something, you've got to do the homework. So, I think the difference here is that we have, as a society, become so used to, okay, I'm signing up for insurance, and now I just pull my insurance card out wherever I go, make sure
and
they
take it.
And
stop thinking about it. Right.
Yeah.
Stop thinking about price, stop thinking about quality,
right.
Or maybe not,
right.
But, you know, just kind of go
right.
where it tells you to go.
Right. And this is called, you are taking control of your healthcare, in that you're doing your own homework for you. You're taking the steps necessary to allow you to benefit the most. But that means you got to do some homework. It means you got to maybe work at it
yeah.
a little bit, and, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. It used to be that we would all do our own little homework on things, and we would all have to give some kind of portion to something that was essential.
Right.
But we've gotten to a point where we just not had to do any of that. So we've become ingrained in saying it's got to be this way and only that way, you know. For instance, I love it when I have my patients come in and they'll go, you know, oh, I could never, ever make a diet change like that because I just have to have this or I just have to have that. And I just snicker and I go, well, do you have to have diabetes too? And do you have to have, it's just kind of like, look, let's just look at the reality of it. Unfortunately, we're in a situation right now where more information and knowledge is power. It's always been that way, but now it's more essential than ever because we've got people, whatever side of the aisle you're on politically, it doesn't really matter because we've got people who are making decisions for our lives, and they're making very strong decisions for our lives without our input. So without our input, with anybody else's input that works in the industry or anything like that, it's just not happening. So it puts the onus back on us to be able to say, all right, this is what we got to do. I got to take care of me. And that's exactly what situation I found myself in. I have to take care of me. I have to figure this out. And so, yes, I have to openly admit I am running two programs right now simultaneously until I figure it out myself. Personally, I think I'm just going to drop the health insurance. But, again, it's a big paradigm shift, and I get that.
Right.
I get that personally, you know. So I'm
right.
in the process of dropping that. And why I can run these two parallel together is because collectively – I'm paying $50 more a month than what I was paying before they raised me an extra $500. So for me, the same price as what I had before. So it's in my budget right now.
Right.
But you know, it does mean that I get to save at least half of that when I drop one of these. So, you know, I just needed to run them simultaneously until I see. Plus, you know, one picks up February 1st, the other one picked up January 1st. The health share program doesn't pay for any of the, or doesn't even consider doing any of that, any of the standard kind of annual stuff. for two
Which
months.
Health share? Because Liberty Health Share actually does reimburse the full cost of labs as they relate to your annual physical. They'll pay for a mammogram. They'll pay for a colonoscopy as a part of a screening. They do pap smears. So things that are considered preventive, they also reimburse fully for childhood vaccines.
Liberty. Yeah, I did. But they will. They have a hold for the first 2 months.
Okay, they have a hold.
So all of that stuff is like, I can't do any of that for 2 months. So, and I actually was due in December for some things. But I put everything on hold knowing that my health insurance was about to change, and if anything needed to be followed up on, I didn't know if I was going to be able to do that. Liberty picked up, and Liberty doesn't do the traditional stuff for 2 months, and then the health insurance kicks in February 1st, so I kind of had to wait it all out and see how it worked.
Gotcha.
So I kind of had to, I mean, it took so much thought. I'm telling you guys, it took a lot of thought on my part. It really did. And it's still, I'm still sorting it out. But I can't help but believe that this is going to work to my benefit in the long run. So that's why I wanted to do this show early in the year. I wanted people to understand that you're not the only ones in this particular situation. I'm right there with you. Doc, you understand it. You get it. You live it every day. You see people with it every day, living it every day. So it's time to get the word out. And I would hope that we could do it again later on in the year when people are making those decisions again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Now, did we cover everything that you wanted to? Because we're almost – and I apologize, you guys, but we did not get any questions on the board. We do have some – let's see. Do we have questions on the blog? I think we do. Let me see if we covered these. Okay, we talked about insurance. We talked about it. There's a question here that says, what if I need extensive treatment? How does that work? We talked about that. Let's see. There's a question here about the IRS. That's weird. I have a high deductible insurance plan, and my coworker informed me last week that I'm not eligible for direct primary care, something about the IRS. You know anything about that?
I know that people are not yet allowed to use HSA funds for direct primary care until the state officially passes legislation saying that we are not insurance. But otherwise, there shouldn't be any tax issues I'm not certain what that person was referring to. Allowed to, and certainly many people do who have high deductible plans pair it with DPC.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to say that's the best we can do with that question, but, you know, feel free to expand upon that on the blog, and we'll see what we can do, okay? We're pretty much out of time right now. We could talk about this forever. We could just keep going with this. But I think we scratched the surface pretty well, and if anybody has anything that they want to tell us, or if you think that you want us to expand a little more as we book maybe later on in the year, let us know, okay? And Doc, do you have anything else? How do they get in touch with you?
No, if anybody has questions, our website is www.mydirectmd.com, and our phone number is 407-367-5676. Eric Meyer is the managing partner. He's great at answering all these little questions with intricacies about how things work with insurance or Aflac plans or what have you. So feel free to reach out to us at any time.
Cool. Thank you so much. Everybody, thank you for joining.
It was so good to be on.
Oh, it was great. It was, you know, and thanks so much for indulging me on picking it apart and being patient with me. And I hope everybody, I hope you maintained your patience with me. I just kind of wanted to... you could get that that level of understanding up a little bit. So I appreciate it, everybody. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. We're going to put out a list of all of our upcoming shows probably the next few months. So everybody has an idea of what's coming up when, because that was one of the things in terms of feedback that we got for, instead of just announcing for the next week, tell us what's coming up so we can plan too. So that's a fair point, and that's what we're going to do. And you're coming back, right? You're going to come back? We just don't know when yet?
Oh, sure. You just
okay,
let me
cool.
know when.
All right, cool. Everybody, have a great night. We'll see you in a couple weeks. And thanks for listening to The Whole Scoop. Good night, everybody. Okay. Wow, we didn't.